This is the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and the leading producer of quality fertilizer products. The podcast is intended to facilitate the transfer of knowledge for farmers and crop advisors, improving farm profitability and environmental sustainability. With Yara, knowledge grows.
You're listening to Yara's Crop Nutrition Podcast, and we are back with Dr. Steve Petrie and his agronomic tip of the week, his ATW. The last few weeks, we've been talking about the four R's of nutrient management. If you haven't listened to those, go back and listen. Really good information there that you should know. Today, we're going to talk about health, soil health, and how that relates to plant health and productivity. Dr. Steve, tell us a little bit about health.
Well, you know, Scott, whenever I've gone to the doc, the first thing that happens is that either the doc or a nurse will take my temperature and my blood pressure. It seems like no matter why I went to the doc, the first thing they do is they'll read my temperature. It used to be a thermometer under my tongue. Now it may be a digital reading on my forehead. But nonetheless, they're taking our temperature and they do the blood pressure.
Why do they do those two things? Why are those important?
Well, those are sort of a general overall indicator of your health. You know, if your temperature is in the normal range, mm-hmm. your blood pressure is in the normal range. Okay, now let's talk about what the specific symptoms are that you wanted to come in and see the doctor for. Okay. And then you can get into the specific discussion. And that's kind of analogous to what we as soil scientists and agronomists do whenever we look at a soil test result. A soil test report, mm-hmm. the very first thing that I do, and I think all of my colleagues do, is to look at the soil pH reading. Whether I've been called because there's an issue with a potential nutritional disorder, maybe it's to help develop a nutrient management plan for a crop, identify a problem, potentially a toxicity, or again, maybe a deficiency, the very first thing that we look at is the soil pH. Now, it doesn't usually tell us exactly what's wrong with that crop or what the nutritional disorder might be, but it's one of those things that we look at just because it tells us so much about the health of the soil and the implications then in terms of plant nutrition or even toxicities.
How is that pH in the soil measured, Steve?
Well, pH is measured by a pH meter. It's okay. A fairly straightforward analytical technique. A soil is mixed with an amount of water, either a one-to-one soil to water, maybe a one part of soil, two parts of water. Sometimes there's a little salt added to the water. Sometimes it's just pure distilled water. There are slightly different techniques. But then an electrode is placed into that liquid, and the pH is read off a scale. And this marvelous instrument used to be a needle. Now it's a digital readout that'll say the soil pH is 4.8 or 6.9 or 7.5 or whatever it may be.
So is there a baseline or a normal range for soil pH?
Well, the soil pH that I've encountered in my career, the lowest soil pH that I've seen has been in the low fours. I've seen reports of and talked with colleagues of mine that have actually seen pH values in the upper threes, but those are very unusual conditions, and that's actually acidic enough to begin to cause the soil, the mineral fabric in the soil, to dissolve. It's so acid. So those are very unusual. Low fours, though, I've encountered several different times. The highest pH I've ever encountered myself was a low 9 value. But again, a colleague of mine, a good friend, actually saw a field where the pH was 10.8 and all sorts of nutritional disorders in that field and so forth. But the normal range would be typically between about 5 or 5.5 up to the low 8 value would be the range that we would see normally. Now, the ideal range for most crops is somewhere between 6 to 6.5 on the low range and 7.5 on the upper range.
What do those numbers mean, Steve? You're spouting numbers, but what are those?
Sure. Well, we take 7 to be a neutral pH. And so we have pH values that are higher than 7. Like 7.5 or 8, and those are considered alkaline. Mm-hmm. They have a higher concentration of alkaline ions than acid ions. And conversely, when the pH is below 7, 6, 5, 4, mm-hmm. those have a lot of hydrogen ions, and so they're more acidic. And so we have this scale called the pH scale, on which we use to represent the acidity in the soil. Again, 7 is neutral, higher is alkaline, lower is acid. The further you deviate from 7, the more alkaline and the more acid the soil is.
Okay. Why does the pH in the soil matter?
Well, pH has a wide range of effects on soil characteristics, from the microbiology in the soil to the availability of nutrients and even the potential for toxic elements to become of concern. So it affects the biology and the chemistry of the soil.
And how does the pH change? Is that something that just naturally occurs? If we leave the, let's say we leave the land alone, does the pH change naturally, or is it something we're doing as we're farming these soils?
Well, let's go back and go back to before humans began to influence soils.
Okay.
So look at North America before, not before certainly there were Indians here, because they did do things that disturbed the soil, but really to a much lesser extent than when Europeans arrived. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to take an Iowa prairie soil or a California Central Valley soil at 1500. And so the soil forming factors that have been acting on that soil, rainfall, parent material, topography, and all the other factors that influence soil, are in a relatively natural state. And the acidity or the alkalinity of those soils are based primarily, although not exclusively, but almost all, on just what's been the natural processes acting on the soil. In that environment, low rainfall and so forth, a Central Valley soil in California is most likely to be alkaline for a variety of reasons. The pH typically of low rainfall, of soils found in low rainfall areas, typically is alkaline, greater than 7, mm-hmm. somewhere between 7.5 and 8.2 or 8.3 in most situations. Conversely, if we're looking at an area with higher rainfall, 30 or 40 inches of rainfall or higher, those soils will typically be acid. And that has to do with the leaching of the basic cations from the soil and other factors. But typically in higher rainfall areas, the soils will be more acid. Now, there are influences of parent material and so forth, but if we look at that one factor, rainfall, that will tell us in many cases what the natural pH of that soil would have been. Now, lots and lots of exceptions, and my colleagues that deal with soil forming factors and genesis and classification will certainly be aware of places where this guideline doesn't work. But typically, high rainfall soils are acid. Low rainfall soils, or soils that formed in low rainfall regions, are alkaline, have pHs above 7.
So if we're artificially irrigating, does that pH level drop? So let's say, again, you said in an undisturbed natural environment in the Central Valley of California, those pHs are a little more alkaline. If we're irrigating on a regular basis and leaching some of those ions out, does that get us into an acidic situation?
That's difficult to answer completely accurately, because most of the time when we're irrigating, we're also applying fertilizers, mm-hmm. and fertilizers have an effect as well. But let me speculate for a moment just about irrigation without any fertilization.
Okay.
And in that environment, if we have been irrigating for, in some areas in southern Idaho I'm familiar with, some areas in California, we've probably been irrigating for more than 100 years. Mm-hmm. And certainly in those environments, we would have had time to begin to change the chemistry in the soil due to leaching. And in some cases, when there were salts present, we may have leached those salts, and those would be changing the pH and so forth. The amount of the pH change due simply to irrigation in, say, 100 years would probably be fairly small. The soil forming processes that have taken place in, for example, the Midwestern U.S., the Corn Belt, mm-hmm. those soils were laid down in their original state when the glaciers retreated, and that was 13 to 14,000 years ago. So there's been 14 or 15 or 16,000 years of rainfall and all the other factors that have taken that from unconsolidated or various parent material and converted that into a soil. And so it's they've had many, many times the irrigation that we would have been putting on for only like 100 years or a little bit more. So we would have lowered the pH some, not nearly to the levels that it would be in some other soils.
Okay, so I know that if I go into the doctor and my temperature is much higher or much lower than the 98.6 normal temperature, I know that that's detrimental. I'm not going to feel well. Or if I go in and they measure my blood pressure and it's lower than normal or higher than normal, that puts me at risk of certain diseases or health issues. If the pH of the soil is not in that normal range around the, you said 6.5 to 7.2 level?
7.5, yeah.
7.5. What does that, how does that affect, or how does, what concerns should we have if we're above or below that normal range of pH?
Well, the first thing that I would be concerned about would be nutrient availability. Although that's my take, because I'm more of a soil chemistry, soil fertility person. If I were a soil microbiologist, I would be more concerned about the impact of that soil pH on the microbial population, mm-hmm. the various different types of organisms that live in the soil, and how active they are. So both of those are very important. I'm going to focus my looking on the soils at what the pH does to the nutrient availability, or even in some cases, potential toxicities. So I look at the soil pH, and if it's 6.5 to 7.5, I go, okay, you know, that's a normal range. Your temperature is somewhere between like 98.3 or 4 and 99 or something. You're in that range of 98.6. You're in the normal range around that. Now, that's a general guideline. If I've got a soil in which I'm growing an alfalfa crop or some other legume where the bacteria are particularly sensitive to the pH, I'd be concerned if it's below 6.5.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of our crops, we can go down as low as 6 before we really need to be concerned. We need to track it and so forth. And individual crops have a wide range in where they do best based on the soil pH, and we can talk about that a little later. But so if the first thing is, if soil pH is say 6 or better, not too worried. Starts to get below 6, I immediately start to worry about phosphorus deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
Much more likely to see phosphorus deficiencies on acid soils, because the phosphorus that's in the soil solution and available to crops is precipitated with compounds that become more soluble, more available on acid soils, which precipitates the phosphorus, and the phosphorus availability goes down. So phosphorus is the first one. Then I also worry about increasing likelihood, and as we go to 5.5 and down to 5, then I worry about toxicities, particularly of aluminum. And we get down in the low fives, 5.2, 5.3, certainly any lower than that, and I very much worry about toxicities of aluminum. Mm-hmm. Now, aluminum is not an essential plant nutrient. It's purely toxic. But anytime we get into low pHs, we need to worry about aluminum toxicity. And in some cases, we need to worry about manganese toxicity as well. The metal micronutrients, manganese, copper, zinc, and iron, are all more available on acid soils. So from a plant nutrition standpoint, soil pH around 6 or maybe a little lower, it's acidic enough to keep those nutrients in solution. We're less likely to see a micronutrient deficiency on an acid soil, with the big exception of molybdenum. Molybdenum is sort of the oddball in the micronutrient world in that it is less available on acid soils. And in fact, a number of years ago, I was did a number of field trials with molybdenum on clover pastures in Western Oregon, and we found a very dramatic response to molybdenum. We tripled the growth of clover by putting on 1 pound of molybdenum per acre. and because the soils were acid. We could accomplish the same yield by putting on 4 tons of lime. It was much more cost effective to use a lower rate of lime with a little bit of molybdenum. Conversely, if I look at a soil sample and I see the pH is 7.5 or greater, I also begin to think about phosphorus deficiencies again, because in this case, the phosphorus is precipitated by different compounds, but the phosphorus availability falls off as we get above 7.5. Maximum phosphorus availability is between about 6.5 and 7.5. So low pH, I worry about phosphorus. High pH, I also worry about phosphorus. High pH soils, I also worry about all the metal micronutrients I just mentioned, copper, manganese, zinc, and iron. Because as the pH goes up, the solubility of these metal micronutrients goes down dramatically. And anytime we get to an alkaline soil, but certainly above 7.5 or very much of a concern above 8, we're much, much more likely to see micronutrient deficiencies. You can think about it as a plate of iron in an acid will dissolve. Sort of what's going on in the soil. The more acid it is, the more of these metals that dissolve and become available. Conversely, as we go to high pH soils, the less dissolves and the more likely we are to see micronutrient deficiencies.
So it sounds like, pH, as we go into the doctor, let's say, and we're looking at the blood pressure and the temperature, and we're going in and trying to get a good overall understanding of the health of the field and the plants in the field. We take a soil sample, we look at that pH. If it is for the crop, there's different normals, like you said. There's some crops that do better in higher acidic or higher alkaline soils, but we need to know what that normal is. And if it's outside of those normal ranges, then we're affecting the plant growth and the efficiencies of the uptake of the nutrients in the soil or the nutrients that we're adding to the soils. Is that correct?
Exactly. If we encounter soils that are either extremely acid or extremely alkaline, the microbes which are involved in nitrogen cycling, the mm-hmm. conversion of organic matter to ammonium and then nitrification of ammonium to nitrate, those processes are slowed when the soils are too acid or too alkaline.
I see.
And because it's a microbial process, we know that it's temperature mediated and there has to be moisture because it has to be the right temperature for these microbes to do well. But soil pH plays a key role as well. And if the pH is wrong, it's just like, and you think about it, if you have an upset stomach and you need to take a Rolaids or a Tums or whatever mm-hmm. the brand is to neutralize the acidity mm-hmm. because your stomach feels better, sort of like that with the soil microbes. If the soil is too acid, then those microbes don't feel very good. They don't do their processes, the mineralization. The nitrification processes can be slowed enough to actually reduce nitrogen fertilizer availability to crops. Unless, of course, we're applying nitrate when that is immediately available because we're already applying the form that's taken up by crops.
Thank you, Dr. Steve Petrie, for letting us know a little bit more about pH and pH in soils and how it can affect your overall soil health and sustainability as well as your plant health and your nutrition solution that you're providing. Next week, we're going to continue our discussion about pH. Specifically, what can you do to alter the pH? If you're above or below those normal guidelines for the crop that you're farming, what can you do to increase or decrease that pH so that it's optimal for soil health, microbial health, and optimal for nutritional uptake? We hope you learned a little bit. We hope you enjoyed listening to Dr. Steve Petrie. If you did, consider sharing it with a friend who might find it also interesting. If you'd like, go on to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast and give us a favorable rating and give us some feedback. Make sure you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any of these valuable episodes. And we'll see you next week. You've been listening to the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. For more information about our company, please visit us at www.yara.com or yara.us, or for Canada, yaracanada.ca.